Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing?
I am well, John. How are you, man?
How are you feeling about your crypto holdings lately?
Quite good, actually. I'm really
I
excited.
know
I'm
it. I know it.
actually a convert.
Really? Are you going to be addicted now? You never bought anything before this year. Is that true?
That is 100% true. I've been sort of playing really safe, but I think that I'm gonna dip my toes a bit further now. I'm up to my ankles now.
Oh man. So what was the gateway coin for you? What's going to lead to your downfall?
Oh God, it was Polymatic was the first one.
Okay, the one I was telling you about.
The one you recommended. I also missed the boat on Solana. No thanks to you, but I'm sure there will
I
be
did
more to
tell
come.
you. I told you about Solana a
I
few
just
months
don't
ago.
listen, John. I don't listen.
Well, that's a different problem. Yeah, and Ethereum is hitting new records lately.
I saw that,
Here,
yeah.
where are we? Into the second week of November, hitting new peaks along with Bitcoin, of course.
Yeah,
You
yeah.
almost could not have missed unless you bought Shiba Inu, or I guess Doge isn't doing that great right now.
I do own some Doge as well, and that's not doing as
Oh
well.
no, I'm
But
sorry. I
I'm
meant
not mad about
Squid.
it.
Unless
Oh,
you bought
Squid.
Squid, yeah, that
Yeah,
was not good. Yeah.
that was not good.
We also have good news. The infrastructure bill passed. It's like so much of that is repairs. I'm like, oh, thank goodness. Fix that mess. Supply chains are problem. Everything's a problem.
It's all a problem, and hopefully this bill will fix all of our problems, right?
Yes. Fortunately, this week we have a different kind of specialist in infrastructure, in blockchain infrastructure. We have Cecily Mack, the COO of Blockdaemon. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Great to meet you both.
Yeah. You have a great experience in tech, and how long have you been with Blockdaemon? Because it's taking off right now. So did you just jump in and it took off, or was this building up for some time now?
Good question. I actually met the founder CEO Constantine in the summer of 2020, and we had a chat that was supposed to be a 15 or 30 minute intro that bled way beyond an hour. And I agreed after that call to come on as an advisor. And so for the second half of last year, I helped get some things in place and support some basic operational needs for the company. We grew from, I think, 12 to 25 in those last 2 quarters. And then I came on full time as the COO in Q1 of this year. March 1st was actually my start date, and we've continued to accelerate in growth and grow pretty aggressively since then.
Yeah, I'll say. I saw that you guys are now a unicorn.
This is true. Yeah, we've had some great scaling. So beginning of the year, we were just under 30 people. We're over 100 now. And just last month, we announced that we had closed our Series B, right hot on the heels of our Series A. Our B round did put us into unicorn status. We raised $155 million, led by SoftBank at a $1.1 billion pre. So we're in a next level of growth and scale and a lot of exciting things to come as an organization right now. And it's great to have those types of investors backing us, both from the A and also the B.
Yeah, great. Yeah, those two came. That's pretty good validation when they come. So, when it ramps like that and so close together, my startup experiences were exact opposite of those. I'm terrible at picking. So, congratulations to you on getting in and doing well. It's not an easy life with the startups and taking off. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
no,
good on you.
been at this for a while. I started working exclusively with startups, actually in in-house roles as an attorney in 2004, when I joined a music company, Listen.com, that had been or was just right around then acquired by Real Networks, and have been with a range of organizations since then. And this particular journey with Blockdaemon has been just the product, I think, of a wonderful convergence of factors. There's no single thing that has led to this pace. It's the company was started actually 4 years ago, when Constantine recognized a gap and a need in the market. And the team's just been really smart about prioritizing engineering hires and keeping a very high quality bar. And of course, the market is growing and the demand is expanding at a pace that meets one that we're trying to meet as far as our ability to deliver and
what a problem.
Partner with this industry. Yeah. So it's been a good convergence.
Too much business.
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned blockchain infrastructure. Tell us more precisely what you guys are all about.
Sure. So our real business is offering full nodes and staking validator nodes for, I think we're up to over 45 individual protocols at this point. We try to focus in the enterprise space. So we work closely with crypto native companies, funds, investors, financial institutions, as well as a handful of startups and other retail investors, and helping them take advantage of this explosive growth in the crypto markets. You know, interestingly, we're not ourselves selling crypto or even frameable as a crypto company. We're really the software solution that's enabling a lot of this growth for big customers with high expectations quality-wise. And so I like to think of us actually as the AWS of Web3. It's a way that I can get my family to kind of understand what we're doing.
So you mentioned retail investors. So someone could hire you to run nodes for them and be the staking for different cryptocurrencies?
So sure, we do have a kind of a one-stop shop on our website where anyone can, with a credit card, leverage one of our node offerings. And that was some of our kind of early table stakes product in market. But a lot of the big global, you know, retail investors, financial institutions are getting into this area as a strategic and smart and safe way to invest for their customers. And so although a lot of the big name clients we have are not publicly known quite yet, you can imagine that if
there's you can tell us one.
Just a couple,
we
right?
We don't have that many. We don't have too many.
Not that many listeners. Anyway, you can imagine. So, you know, we do have a handful that are well known, and you know, example customers would be like Voyager or Uphold or Anchorage, where they're really trying to take advantage in a more collective fashion and representing their own customers or client bases in staking and getting some of the benefit of the opportunity that's in market right now. And there are a lot more to come. And it's interesting, you know, in going through our Series A and our Series B discussions and working with investors, there is this sense of fear of missing out. And Blockdaemon has proven to be, as I think all infrastructure companies are actually in the space, I don't want to make this just about Blockdaemon. This is a way to kind of get in on this, you know, rush and transition into decentralized global value exchange without having to, as an institution with very high standards, invest itself in crypto itself.
So tell me, what's sort of the journey that your typical client would undergo if they become a client of your services? So say that I have no blockchain stuff in place right now. I'm sort of dipping my toes into the space, and I have, say, a medium bank with some wealth management customers. What's sort of the use case that you can bring to my company?
Sure. So one way that we might have a bank work with us would be to themselves have an interest in investing in, let's say, Ethereum 2. They want to take advantage of some of the high yield staking opportunities in market today. They could work with us to basically invest or stake a portion of their assets through our own infrastructure, through our own validator or other node ecosystem, and in turn benefit from that stable upside that comes from the returns on a protocol-specific basis from staking. We tend to work with these banks and try to understand I'd rather frame them as financial institutions at this stage, but they're going to be looking at their own assets, their own opportunities that they have in place in increasing value for their bases, both from a strategic investor standpoint, but also from just a pure asset staking standpoint, and work with us to do this in the most secure way possible. It's often insured. They're dealing with a legitimate company that's backed by some of the best known investors in the world, and they can be comforted with a baseline protocol specific return expectation, which in some cases, you know, 6, 8, 10%. I think, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, when I was first committing my career to crypto and blockchain, it seemed like this kind of dark, mysterious, almost black market industry, right?
Silk, I mean, the Thanksgiving kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's like
crackdown from the FBI.
Absolutely. I mean, Thanksgiving dinners, 2017. What do you mean, Cecily? You know, you're a respectable citizen and a working mother. What do you mean you're getting into crypto? It sounds dark and scandalous, right? Today, I think we all know, and hopefully I imagine many of your listeners, this is all so much more mainstream. And I mean, it's that a lot of that kind of halo of fear and skepticism has waned, particularly as some of the bigger financial institution, you know, ETF and other opportunities have emerged. It's just, it's not as, quote, alternative of an industry as it once was. I actually use that a bit to assess sophistication in getting to know whether it's a client, a customer, or a candidate for a role. If they start the conversation with, yeah, you know, this still seems really risky, and we don't really know if we want to get into this yet, and I don't know how to explain it to my partner, or whatever it is, I know their perception of the industry is still largely based on some time on the internet, maybe a little bit of, you know, online learning, but there are some phenomenal and mature and now public companies that have built wildly successful enterprises and coming out with a lot of success. And so I think the sophistication expectation levels continue to rise. And particularly this year, big household names are getting into this industry now. And it's hard to frame it as too alternative or, you know, potentially criminal or underbelly anymore.
Yeah, I just saw Matt Damon is now the spokesperson for crypto.com, I think it was.
Yeah. There's a great example. I mean, yeah. Jump the shark.
Then, right. FTX is, they sponsor one of the stadiums, I think Miami. Is a FTX stadium.
That sounds right. That sounds
or,
right.
Or FTX is like the official crypto exchange of Major League Baseball.
It is. Yeah.
So these things are kind of getting into just getting mainstreamification, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure. It's interesting. This is just in the past few weeks I noticed these. Actually, Tom Brady and Giselle, I think, are spokespeople for FTX.
Yeah, oh. That wouldn't surprise
Giselle,
me.
Like I know her. You know, Giselle and Tom. They were here last night.
They told you that over dinner. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I this effort to for the marketing and to get people more comfortable around this is really seems to be snowballing. I mean, we had like DeFi summer last year and some of those products seem more familiar, like lending and borrowing.
Yeah.
For
sure,
margin, all these kinds of things,
and we see it a lot in the talent pool too. Honestly, you know, I think hiring in this market is hyper competitive, right? Particularly technical talent, and even now, so at our stage of the company, we're roughly 120 people now. We're building out a global team. We're executing against a M&A strategy and buying up a handful of startups along the way. Making sure that our finance and legal and regulatory functions are robust enough to meet the needs of the organization going into the next year and so on. And the talent pool has evolved a lot, even just in the last 6 months. So we used to be attracting more kind of startup savvy, crypto native investors or people who are ahead of the game and looking into and studying or investing in the space 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. A lot of the people with whom we're meeting now have been studying crypto and blockchain trends and trying to understand the role that infrastructure plays while they are sitting in very large global corporations and planning their exit into a crypto or blockchain startup opportunity. And I think that the risk tolerance, that bar has come way down and the tolerance has gone way up. So I love that just selfishly in an operating role that the perception has matured to allow for a really deep and phenomenal bench of high quality talent that wants to get into this space.
In your role, you've basically been tasked with helping the company scale up and say hire talent, which can be quite a competitive thing or quite a competitive endeavor, especially in this market now. What are some of the key takeaways that you found that have helped you and your company sort of attract and scale at the level that you have given your recent success?
Well, a couple things. And I love that question because I think and work on this every day. I send around a weekly note to the company, my TGIF posts. And the one I sent around a couple weeks ago was about the unique way that Black Demon makes decisions, primarily about hiring and resources as we're scaling. And I think this plays a really key role in our ability to be competitive in a very intense talent market. And that is that we heavily prioritize quality and speed in everything that we do. So a lot of organizations, when they're scaling at this stage, and I've been part of them in other industries over the last 15 years, you know, a lead who needs to hire somebody or onboard a contractor or software tool or whatever it is given a bit of a budget and a little bit of time and a rough estimate of what's needed. And they'll go out and do their diligence and come back with a handful of recommendations or options and then one recommendation. And we see that a lot. So in our case, we have people come back and say, you know, well, here's the, for example, the hire we want to make. And it's an expert in this space that we need 6 months of work on. And this is how much it's going to cost. And it's going to take 4 weeks. And here's the person who's going to do it. And my response is consistently, okay, well, is this the best person that we could get? Oh, really? So their boss might be superior, or there's a competitor, but they might be a little bit more expensive. Okay, well, let's go after that resource. So I always push the team, and I think collectively push our team to go after the highest quality that we can find in resourcing our needs. And that's from engineering to HR. It's across the entire company.
And then we get to tell you guys to stop calling me, though. It's just too much.
It's rough, right?
No, a few times already.
Yeah, no,
I know you're going after the best.
We'll give you a week break or so. Gosh, good. Yeah, so we really go after, you know, we prioritize quality. And then second is speed. Because this space is moving so quickly, time really is money for us. And so if something is going to take 4 weeks, I'll often ask, okay, well, can we do it in half the time at twice the price? Or whatever the price adjustment needs to be. And using that prioritization of quality and speed over cost across the board, the way we do things, has allowed us to move very quickly on key hires, move very quickly on bringing on phenomenal capabilities, talent, tools, whatever it might be, to move quickly and kind of deprioritize this budget consideration that tends to overwhelm startups at this stage. And it's not that we have money to burn. We are, of course, well capitalized. We have been cash flow positive for a year. But what we recognize is that time actually is money to us now. So doing something twice as fast in the long run will create a revenue opportunity or a savings that by far makes up for any additional cost to a solution. So that's one thing. You know, another thing in scaling, we, in particularly hiring technical talent, have wanted to be hyper visible for our recruiters and other sources of networking and talent discovery around the world. We did something this summer where we actually offered $100,000 per hire bounty for a particular type of engineer we were seeking to hire. We contacted all of our recruiters around the world and we said, you know, until further notice, anybody who brings us an engineer who fits these qualifications, who's with us for 90 days, will get, in addition to their already phenomenal compensation, and a $100,000 cash bonus. And it affirmed a couple things. First of all, it served as a nice incentive, but it also showed the market and also the talent we were pursuing how seriously we take this and how much we prioritize it. And then third, and this is one of my favorites, you know, I've worked for startups where the founder is somebody who's got a business orientation mindset, maybe got a nice MBA out of a nice university, and they've come up with their problem and they've come up with their creative solution, and they hire a couple product people and a designer, and then they deploy the engineers to build what they envision and they raise capital on that and on they go. It's actually flipped in our company in that I tell our business people all the time that we actually work for the engineers. The engineers don't work for us. And even one step beyond that, our engineers, our whole company is really in service of a broader ecosystem that is actually changing the world. It is transforming the way that value is moved around the planet. And with that mindset, it's a much more exciting big picture play for us. And we operate much more effectively as a team with a singular vision and mission, which makes it fun. And so we don't live in an environment that's bogged down in politics and a bunch of, you know, who got what credit for what thing, because nobody's really in it for their own individual team or, you know, scorecard benefit. And that's really helped a lot too. And I think anybody who works within Blockdaemon today would agree that we do have this kind of bigger picture orientation without having to be too Silicon Valley about it. We really do feel like there's something bigger happening that we're in service of, and that makes it really exciting and really fun.
But what do you see that future out as?
Well, the way I see this, and I share this with a number of my colleagues, we talk about it a lot, is that the whole global financial system is being disrupted right now. And the way that we can move value around among people or organizations without the time or money cost of middlemen is changing the way that the global financial system works. So if you can actually go user to user in a decentralized way, or institution to institution in a way that doesn't have three or four steps of middlemen along the middle, whether that's governed by smart contracts or other, you know, decentralized finance capabilities, it actually creates a lot of efficiency. It helps business move faster. It saves the market and those who are impacted by transactions from human error. It can mobilize innovation in ways that may have been more difficult with a lot of the kind of hurdles and middlemen along the way in more historical conventional versions of running financial systems. And, you know, the era of considering resistance to that seems to be waning, because we do have big institutions jumping on board and recognizing that this is an opportunity to really improve the way that they function and service their customers and clients and grow wealth. And it also works really well for kind of an emergent arena of people who will be impacted by this as well. You know, the gig economy, smaller micro businesses in developing countries. When you take out these dependencies on institutions that can really cause a lot of problems and inefficiency and hurdles and just helping people do what they want to do or live their lives or pay a family member, it's transformative. And so we see that as part of the bigger picture. And if we can help build the infrastructure that makes that possible with a real diverse set of influencers, whether that's our investor in Goldman Sachs or some of the engineering talent that is helping to apply their own creative skills to building things in ways that are durable and sustainable over time, it's a very exciting place to be. And I still feel like even though this is much more mainstream now than it was 3 or 4 years ago, we're still very, very early innings on the space, which makes the work we're doing feel particularly important.
So the power of the DeFi future, more efficient, faster, cheaper, greater financial inclusion. That is a good goal to head towards. And also, yeah. You also support enterprise blockchain solutions for companies that want permissioned blockchains as well. You provide the back-end solution for that?
We do. And that's an area. I mean, I would love to recommend that we have one of our kind of, you know, front-end engineers or builders actually maybe talk to you about that, because it's an emergent area that we're going to be shifting in a lot. DeFi is sort of the 2021 world. We're going to be making a range of kind of experimental, but also hopefully impactful innovations in DeFi and CeFi, and also trying to make sure that we're being responsive to this very quickly accelerating NFT market and beyond. So there's a lot coming there. And I think 2022 will be a year where we see infrastructure companies going beyond just pure enterprise scale solutions, but also using a lot of what we've learned and developed along the way to diversify and touch more core points on the ecosystem at large.
You mentioned you support 40-some protocols. Is the plurality still like Bitcoin, or is it something else? Are there any surprises in how much you support one protocol versus another, or some that have been shooting up lately?
Well, of course. I mean, even just hearing a little bit of the recent conversations on your own podcast, I think you can expect that a lot of what we're seeing among our customers is very consistent with where the market is. So, you know, we went through a wave where Polkadot was very hot and important, Cardano, Graph, Solana has been an area of a lot of innovation and focus in recent weeks for obvious reasons. But we try to really play a bit of a Switzerland model here. We do treat Bitcoin and Ethereum as the kind of appropriate big dogs that they are in the space. And in our own token portfolio, we treat those as valuable and stable and maybe even smarter to hold than fiat currency. But we do really try to take into consideration a range of factors in choosing which protocols we're going to be prioritizing. Sometimes it's a particular client who has a need or a plan that we can collaborate with them on. In other cases, we might have a partner in an academic environment who sees potential for a protocol, and we want to work with them to make sure that we're contributing our own horsepower to development in a way that is servicing the space beyond just an immediate need or trend. But we do try to be as expansive and inclusive as possible.
Great. Yeah. Well, we know good culture doesn't just happen by mistake. It's a lot of hard work, and it gets more difficult as you hire, and it's a bigger challenge. Any lessons or things that you picked up along the way that you were able to apply to keep that culture as you try to develop and grow that culture at Blockdaemon?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big one for us, and we reaffirm this all the time, is a culture of candor and kindness. We try to optimize for a default to kindness and trust or candor, as I said. And that comes through just living by example. Even in a competitive company, moving very quickly, making big decisions every day, we can all still operate from a place of kindness with each other. And that even goes towards, you know, really tough conversations and decisions. If we've had to let anybody go, for example, we do it in a way that is really discreet, in a way that includes a lot of honest communication about how somebody being in a wrong role here is probably our fault, because we either didn't recognize they weren't a right fit for the role, or they weren't supported properly in their own development and position here. So we really try to be generous and kind, even in the toughest moments. And that's from the top down. Constantine, our CEO, operates that way and sets the example all the time.
Can you come to where I work for a few months
and kind of
help out with
anytime.
That?
You got it. I hear you got a rough shop over there. the other one, being candor and just, truthfulness and trustworthiness. Interestingly for me, it took me a lot of years to learn how to say the words "I don't know." I think, it can be very intense working in a startup, particularly, for me as a young woman in my 20s and 30s in Silicon Valley. And it's often very stressful to have a board or a CEO or a boss come to you and ask you a question you don't have the answer to. And for years, I've really fumbled with that. I struggled to admit that I had areas of ignorance or just lack of experience. And it took me a while to learn how to say, "I don't know." And as I did learn that, I witnessed a kind of baseline of trust developing between other leaders and myself, because it's just impossible for all of us to know everything at any given moment. And one of the reasons why people come to startups in the first place is to learn. It's a dynamic environment. There's often no playbook. You're building something that hasn't been built before. And if we can all work together and acknowledge where we have areas to grow and develop, it actually builds confidence. It builds trust. It's a little counterintuitive. So I try to be an example for that all the time. I get asked questions every week. I feel like I should know the answer, but I don't. And the more that I can be an example for that with other folks coming on board and let them feel safe in doing the same, the more we nurture this culture of learning and collective and mutual support for each other. It's something I wish I learned many years before I did. At least we can try to cascade that out now.
Yeah, there aren't enough classes or training for that sort of thing. People seem to have to find that as they go along in their career, or find good mentors and examples of it.
Yeah, and it's important to find those people and you know, seek them out and ask for help. I mean, we have some wonderful support right now, actually, within the company. People are helping us specifically build a healthy culture or support our emergent leaders in becoming more confident managers. And I think, at this stage of roughly 100 people and scaling, it's important for the team members to know that they have the type of support that they want and need to be the type of contributor that they want to be, whether that's a long-term manager or something else. So there are a lot of really remarkable resources out there. I think it's important for companies to, if they do believe in them, you know, take a stand and openly make the investment. And sometimes that means C-level executives being visible and acknowledging they have areas of weakness and they're hiring or onboarding support to help them learn. And that helps other people feel safe to do the same.
Great, great. But I do have another blockchain question, though. On Ethereum, I've been watching this move to proof of stake, just this enormous effort, this huge change in the way it operates. What do you think of that transition, and what does that mean for your company and your customers?
Sure. I love this topic. So proof of stake obviously has the benefits of being more, you know, energy sound, energy efficient. If this, you know, merge goes successfully, which we all expect and hope it does, it's going to do a few things. And the one that I would focus on here is it's going to create more demand and more scarcity at the same time, because people are going to be staking their Ethereum to take advantage of the returns. And that will just create a little bit more tension in market and presumably result in a token value increase over time. Some would say we're already seeing that in the last week or two. But you know, some smart people think that that is just the very beginning of a longer term trend. We have a number of customers and clients who are prioritizing staking Ethereum going into the new year. And so we're really doubling down our resources, technical talent, and beyond to meet that demand. And this is hopefully going to be something that we're going to see some fairly significant impact. One area where Block Daemon is focusing today as well is expanding our options for offering liquid staking in the proof of stake new world that we're entering in. So if somebody wants to lock up a significant chunk of value through a staking offering, whether it's Block Daemon or elsewhere, there's a very interesting opportunity then for the provider to basically make what has been staked liquid for that investor or that holder. So that's an area we're going to see a lot of development in, I think, as well. And it's one that Block Daemon is spending quite a bit of time considering options for. We currently are not classified as a custodian. We're going to need to think through some of the potential, you know, compliance and regulatory considerations around offering liquid staking, but it's something that we do see as a significant opportunity for the industry and a lot of our clients. And so we're knee deep in making some important decisions there going into the new year.
Any advice for any fintechs that are just getting started? You've helped a few companies, and you've already provided some great points. But anything out there for some fintechs or mistakes that you've seen that you wish you could have avoided, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I think in this space, I just encourage anyone with curiosity or an appetite to experiment or grow to maintain an open mind, stay informed, get out of just mainstream media on these topics, invest in intelligence information, follow your interests too. I think there are so many different avenues of opportunity in the blockchain and crypto space today. I think the NFT really revolution is a great example. I worked in the areas of media and music for 15 years before migrating over into crypto several years ago. And I personally love seeing people who were very skeptical about blockchain or crypto, 2 years ago, are now realizing that they have a whole new avenue of access and opportunity through NFTs. I think that the sky is really the limit here for how people want to play. And if something is not interesting, but you want to participate, keep doing your research and looking around and see where the blockchain or crypto application is that could apply to whether if you're an enterprise, to your clients, or even as an individual. I think people are starting to really develop and deepen their intrigue in this industry. And there really is something for everyone. I have a teenager in my house who's, in fact, pretty pretty deep in crypto himself already, and a 76-year-old dad who has his own little investments and learnings and play, and a half-sister who's a phenomenal artist in Brooklyn who's starting to take advantage of NFT opportunities. And they're all doing this and on their own with very little input or influence from me. So I just think this is... again, early innings on a really, really exciting opportunity, and encourage folks to stay informed and kind of follow their interests.
Yeah, some great advice and an interesting family blockchain ecosystem you have going there as well.
True that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast, and good luck to you into 2022. Doesn't look like you need a lot of luck. You're doing everything right. So
thank
it
you
looks like
so
you're
going
to have a great 2022.
Thank you so much. It's great to speak with you both, and thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, great to have you. That's Cecily Mack, the COO of BlockDaemon. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.